Hey, sweetie, your mother showed me this Carvana thing for selling the car. I'm going to give it a try. Wish me luck. Me again. I put in the license plate. It gave me an offer. Unbelievable. Okay, I accepted the offer. They're picking it up Tuesday from the driveway. I haven't even left my chair. It's done. The car is gone. I'm holding a check. Anyway, Carvana, give it a whirl. Love ya.
So good, you'll want to leave a voicemail about it. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, hope everyone's having a great weekend. I'm Tony Bruschi from the Hidden Killers podcast. This is our week in review, a look back at some of the most compelling moments in audio that we've experienced this past week. Brand new episodes start back up again Monday morning right here. Enjoy.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Siobhan Scott is with us. She's a psychotherapist and author of the book Minds of Mass Killers, Understanding and Interpreting the Pathway to Violence. Let's talk about how calculated Lori was or was not, because there's a lot of things we look at here and it just seems like it was grabbed out of the air and then said out loud, and it was some sort of prophecy or this or that. And it seems rather crazy and discombobulated when you add it all together. But there's also a lot of this story where it seemed very well planned out. There was testimony from an Arizona detective on how Chad and Lori conspired against her former husband, Charles Vallow, that shows a very good degree of planning and calculation that the pair engaged in. Where Charles was going to expose the affair and he was going to expose all of Lori's bizarre thinking and ways of what she was doing to the wife of Chad at the time, which we know both ended up dead. But it was very much, look, I know you're doing this. I'm catching you doing this. Very goal-oriented, if you will.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what are we looking at with something like this? Because it doesn't just seem like crazy random all the time. It seems like there's something in at the core of this that's, you know, evil, that really is trying to do horrible things to people.
Yeah, that's the thing that is really striking to me clinically about it, is that even though they had these crazy delusions, bizarre delusions, they could still function in a very calculated, almost psychopathic way.
Yeah.
And that's how we know it was not schizophrenia, because people with schizophrenia don't have the capacity to be organized in their thinking and behavior. They're not goal-directed. And Chad and Lori certainly were goal-directed. One of the audio tapes I listened to was Chad talking with the funeral home to find out the cost of, you know, getting Charles cremated. And he made this story up apparently spontaneously that he was his, you know, Charles had been his uncle, and he gave his name as Chad Daybell, but he spelled it differently. Uh-huh. I'm assuming to try and throw people off who might have been tracking what was going on. And so, yeah, very, very organized. They wanted money. They wanted freedom from the kids. They wanted status, they wanted followers, and this is therefore something that's in a very rare category of mental disorder, because you have the psychotic delusion, but with this psychopathic, as you say, evil.
Yeah, I mean, what was the ultimate goal here? Because obviously, I mean, I would assume, you know, they're saying they're getting these visions and these messages about the end of the world and this and that, and it's going to be in Rexburg. I would assume that Chad maybe knows that that's complete BS. But what is the ultimate goal here for the two of them? Was it just for them to be together, for to start this kind of cult thing? Was it a grandiose idea that this is going to be a big following, and that was more so the motive, or were they really buying their bullshit? And thinking, yeah, the world is going to end, and we got to be here in Rexburg for it to help with their, you know, prophesied roles.
I think you nailed it with all of those things. I think to some degree, if Lori 100% bought it, Chad maybe 50%, maybe 80%. You know, I'm not sure which of the two of them is truly crazier, but I think right now we may say Lori has really lost it, you know, mm-hmm. Having to be in the hospitalized mentally in the state of Idaho for 10 months. She's not well. But I think the grandiosity, they wanted followers and they wanted money and they wanted fine things. And so I think it was all of it together that was driving them. And certainly the desire to be these exalted beings and prophets and have this direct connection to Jesus and Moroni, all these things were all about their ego and their need for constant attention.
When these people say that they got these messages, what are they talking? If they're not BSing it, I mean, if they're really believing that they got a message from God or some sort of higher power, how are they? Are they like hearing the voices in their head? How are they processing this as, oh yes, this is a message from beyond?
Yeah, I would love to be able to sit and ask them those kinds of questions very specifically. Did you hear the voice? My guess is, as people talked about the things Lori was saying, particularly near the end, it did seem to be that she was hearing voices and had claimed to have seen Jesus, you know. It's quite possible that this was something actually happening to her because of an illness in her brain. Chad, I'm not sure about. His may just be more things he thinks up, you know, that make him feel good. And then he amplifies it and tells himself that it's real and it really happened. In other words, very vivid daydreams. But I do think it's quite possible that Lori has had hallucinations and delusions.
And that's where it crosses over into her really believing it, because in her mind, in her prism, these things are happening to her. She thinks she's hearing these things. So
she's hearing them. Yeah. And when she was interacting with her children near the end, this belief system about them being zombies and being taken over by evil spirits and the only way that they could be free would be for them to die, I get the sense that she really did believe that at the time. And I don't know what this is going to be for her in the future if she comes to the realization that this was all her mind playing tricks on her.
Will be very interesting. One more thought, because we've been talking since this happened on Tuesday, where she refused to come back into the courtroom. Eventually, the judge forced her to and said, no, you have to be present here for this trial. Is this the beginning of cracks in Lori, not being able to sit and absorb the material that is so opposing to her mindset and her views and what she believes, that it's almost like throwing water on the Wicked Witch? Or was that just a stunt to get attention and try to control the narrative?
I think it probably is shaking her at this point to be in this position and hear the testimony. And I only heard a bit of it, but it sounded like it was just gruesome about the, you know, the condition of the bodies and the process of discovering them. And this may be causing the crack in her thinking, in her delusional system, that she can no longer just go back to her cell at the end of the day and pretend that, you know, this is all part of God's plan and there's going to be a good outcome here.
And that's what I'm wondering. I mean, if this continues as it is planned to continue, more and more pieces of reality are going to be presented to her. Is this something? I know insanity is not a defense in Idaho, but if she's not capable of participating in her own defense and being in the courtroom, I'm wondering, you know, will this trial make it to an end point, or is this thing going to end up being blown up because of her mental state?
My guess is now that she's on some kind of medication, and we haven't heard any testimony about that. But if she were to start having some cracks in her delusional system, I think what we would see with her would be grief, more akin to grief and more akin to remorse and the sense of, oh my God, what have I been a part of here? And while this would be difficult, I don't think that would prevent her from attending the trial. And she's probably on some kind of medication that they could increase the dose and keep her calm so that she can sit there as ordered by the judge.
This is the examination of the hidden human condition.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers Podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Thank you, Siobhan Scott. Always appreciate it when you're on, getting your insight. Hey, if you want to weigh in on any of the cases that we are discussing here, you can. We have a phone number for that. It's 888-5-KILLER, 888-554-5537. Love to get your thoughts, so we may use them on a future episode of the program. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.